This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
So drop on by to our Thursday-Friday sessions, 10 to 6 p.m. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Valinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
Deborah Bell.
And Glenn Holt.
And it's Pride, Pride, Pride Month.
Yes.
What kind of pride, Jack?
Well, of course, it's also hurricane season, too, but Pride Month.
Coincidence? I think not.
Unfortunately, hurricane season
but
goes longer.
Gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered pride.
Absolutely. And being that it's Pride, we're going to be doing a couple segments on Pride. In our first segment, it's actually one of them that we're going to be submitting to the national broadcast. We're going to do a little bit of the history of the Houston Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgendered Political Caucus. Then, Jeff Reed's going to come in and talk to us about politics. Jeff is a founding member of the Houston Equal Rights Alliance. Then, in the second segment, we're going to talk to the Bayou City Performing Arts about their upcoming concert, There's No Place Like Home. Oh, home, I mean. And they're going to have songs.
Jack made a joke.
Yeah, it's pretty bad, huh? Songs of Judy Garland and exploring her music, life, and loves. It goes from Broadway to Carnegie Hall performances. That sounds really good, too. And lastly, but certainly not leastly, we're going to be interviewing the Grand Marshal Organization, which is the Imperial Court of Houston.
And I understand it's going to be their royalty that we're be interviewing. So
oh,
that will.
Royalty?
That is definitely not leastly.
You better clue me in on that because I'm not quite all up to speed on that. So all of that is coming up on this edition of Queer Voices. And I'm really excited about Pride because I'm not so much involved this year. That means I get to be able to enjoy the bits.
Yeah, and you get to be honored, rightfully
so,
as one of the Grand Marshals.
That's right. That's what I hear, yes.
Yes. Along with Maria Gonzalez, who is going to be joining us in a later segment tonight.
So, all of that's coming up, but let's first go to News Wrap from This Way Out.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Greg Gordon.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending June 9th, 2007. Several thousand gays, lesbians, and their supporters marched and partied in Tel Aviv on June 8th at the 9th Annual Pride Parade and Beach Bash. The event in Israel's commercial hub has been funded by the municipality in recent years after most business supporters backed out, fearing a backlash from religious factions opposed to it. Participants walked and danced in a carnival atmosphere from the central Rabin Square to a downtown beach to hear speeches, DJs, and musical acts. Police reported no serious incidents despite threatened disruptions by right-wing religious opponents. About 15 protesters voiced their hostility to the parade in a nearby closed-off area. The event was held 2 days after Israel's parliament, called the Knesset, passed the first reading of a bill that would allow Jerusalem city officials to ban pride gatherings which would hurt public order, public feelings, or for religious reasons. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, who has an openly lesbian daughter, is opposed to the measure. It needs to pass 3 more readings to become law. Police in Jerusalem approved a permit earlier in the week for a pride event scheduled for June 21st. Violent opposition from religious fundamentalists forced the cancellation of 2 previous pride parades on the streets of Jerusalem. It's not clear whether this year's event will be similar to a police-protected enclosed gathering held last year, or if a parade will again be attempted.
But third time was the charm for a pride parade in the Latvian capital of Riga on June 3rd. In 2005, about 150 marchers were heavily outnumbered by more than 1,000 anti-queer protesters who hurled insults, bottles, and rotten eggs, blocked the streets, and forced the parade to be rerouted. After the Riga City Council banned the parade in 2006, organizers held a religious service at a church and meetings at a hotel. Fundamentalist Christian, ultra-nationalist, and neo-Nazi protesters pelted participants with eggs, rotten food, and feces at both venues. Armed with a Latvian constitutional court ruling that the 2006 ban was illegal, more than 500 LGBT people and their supporters marched this year around a fenced-in park under very heavy police protection, dodging only a paint bomb and a few firecrackers. Riot police outnumbered both the marchers and about 100 jeering anti-queer demonstrators. Pride participants included Sweden's Migration Affairs Minister, Tobias Billström, and six of his country's MPs, a Danish MP, a German MP, Spanish and Norwegian members of the European Parliament, and a large multinational contingent from global human rights group Amnesty International. Marchers carried rainbow flags and placards saying, "Love is a human right," and "No to hatred, we love Latvia." At the same time, however, more than 1,000 people attended a World Against Homosexuality concert in another part of town. Many attendees signed an anti-gay petition and were rewarded with a t-shirt showing two male stick figures engaging in anal sex with the international circle and slash no symbol superimposed on top of them.
Hundreds of gays and lesbians took part in the 10-day Queerfest 07 in late May and early June in New Delhi. Organizers said the festival was a celebration of being gay or lesbian and also a protest of India's Penal Code Section 377, which outlaws carnal intercourse against the order of nature and carries a 10-year prison sentence. Activists say that the law is not usually enforced but allows police to harass and solicit bribes from queer couples and scuttle HIV prevention activities. According to a recent report by the Reuters news agency, if couples refuse or are unable to pay a bribe, they are often put in dingy cells, brutally beaten, and humiliated. A legal challenge to Section 377 has been bogged down in India's court system for several years. Other queer fest events included a film festival, seminars, photo exhibits, performances, and a candlelight vigil.
Nearly all the men arrested at a private party in Iran last month have been released, according to reports this week by Amnesty International. Police raided a birthday party for a gay man in the Iranian province of Isfahan on May 10th. According to witnesses, the police brutally assaulted the host, his parents, and the guests. One said that their clothes were ripped, their faces and bodies were covered in blood, they were beaten up badly. 12 of the men were released soon after the incident, while 5 remained in custody until May 29th, when 4 of them were released. Amnesty says there have been conflicting reports about the remaining detainee. 87 people were arrested at the party, but most of them, including all of the women, were released unconditionally. The remaining detainees all had to post bail and will face trial later this month. A judge has reportedly said that they'll be charged with consumption of alcohol and homosexual conduct. According to Amnesty, the 17 men who remained in jail the longest were said to have been wearing feminine clothing, but that there was no evidence that any sexual activity had taken place. The raid marked the largest single attack on Iran's gay community in recent memory. Sodomy is a crime for which both partners can be punished by death. Any sexual activity outside of heterosexual marriage is also illegal in Iran.
3 months after he called homosexual acts immoral, the chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, Marine General Peter Pace, is headed for retirement. Pace's term ends in September, and U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates, who admitted this week that congressional confirmation for Pace serving another 2-year term would be a backward-looking and very contentious process, said that the Bush administration would nominate Navy Admiral Michael Mullen to replace him. Steve Rawls, a spokesman for the Service Members Legal Defense Network, or SLDN, a support group for lesbi-gay military personnel, said that General Pace's remarks are still fresh in the memory of many of our troops, and no doubt still fresh in the memory of many senators, too. Admiral Mullen, currently Chief of Naval Operations, said during an April appearance at the Brookings Institution in Washington that "Don't Ask, Don't Tell," the Clinton-era policy that bans military service by open gays and lesbians, has served us very well, but that he would be open to reconsidering the issue. The SLDN's Rawls told reporters that public opinion is soundly on the side of revisiting this law. 8 out of 10 Americans want to see it repealed, he said. All of the Democratic Party's presidential contenders favor repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, while all of their Republican counterparts support the policy.
Meanwhile, U.S. queer advocacy groups are expressing alarm over the Bush administration's nomination of Dr. James Holsinger, Jr. of the University of Kentucky College of Public Health to be the next U.S. Surgeon General. Holsinger and his wife founded the Hope Springs Community Church, a well-known ex-gay ministry that claims gays and lesbians can undergo conversion therapy and become heterosexual. Such so-called reparative therapy has been denounced by nearly every major medical organization in the country, including the American Psychological Association. In a paper titled Pathophysiology of Male Homosexuality, Holsinger claimed that his understanding of biology and anatomy led him to oppose equality for gays and lesbians. As president of the United Methodist Church's National Judicial Council, Holsinger voted last year to support a pastor who refused to allow a gay man to join the congregation, and in 2004 he voted for the expulsion of an openly lesbian minister. The National Gay and Lesbian Task Force's Matt Foreman said that the Bush administration was once again throwing red meat to its ravenous anti-gay supporters, while the Human Rights Campaign's Joel Somani said that it is essential that America's top doctor value sound science over anti-gay ideology. Holsinger's nomination must be approved by the U.S. Senate's Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions, whose Democratic members include presidential hopefuls Hillary Clinton of New York, Barack Obama of Illinois, and Christopher Dodd of Connecticut.
The new mayor of England's university town of Cambridge is a male-to-female transsexual, and so is her partner. 45-year-old Liberal Democrat Jenny Bailey was elected to the post by fellow city council members in late May. Bailey's partner, 49-year-old Jennifer Little, is a former city council member herself and assumed the honorary title of mayoress, which is given to the spouse of the mayor. "People can take me as a role model if they want," Bailey told London's Times newspaper, "but for transgender people, all we want is to disappear and become normal. So I don't want to let it define me, and I certainly do not want it to eclipse being mayor." Bailey is the first self-identified transsexual to serve as a mayor in Britain. The world's first transsexual mayor, New Zealand's Georgina Baer, went on to win a seat in her country's parliament.
And finally, 32-year-old Kanako Otsuji is a candidate in next month's election for a Democratic Party of Japan seat in the legislature's upper house. She became the country's first openly lesbian or gay elected official in 2003 by winning a seat on the local Osaka Assembly, and now she's Japan's first such candidate for the national legislature to be nominated by a major political party. Even though Japan does not legally recognize lesbian and gay unions, the outspoken Otsuji celebrated her same-gender relationship this week during a festive ceremony with Maki Kimura, her partner of 4 years. The event took place in Nagoya, the country's third-largest city, during an HIV-AIDS prevention festival called Nagoya Lesbian and Gay Revolution. About 1,000 guests attended the ceremony. The chairperson and the secretary general of the Democratic Party of Japan and the governor of Osaka sent congratulatory telegrams. Photos of the smiling couple, each wearing bridal gowns and holding bouquets, appeared in newspapers across the country. Otsuji told the Gay Japan News website that gays and lesbians are hiding themselves in society to protect themselves. "I want people to know that gays and lesbians exist in society by looking at us."
That's News Wrap for the week ending June 9th, 2007, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon.
And I'm Rick Watts. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jack Falinski, and this interview we're going to be contributing to the Pacifica National Pride broadcast that is going to be distributed around the country on a sort of electronic way that they do it, not on satellite, but so that any station can pick it up and be able to play it when they want. We plan to play, we're not sure whether there's going to be 3 hours or 5 hours. We'll be playing segments throughout July of the broadcast, and we're sort of sharing this among the five stations, the five Pacifica stations, and believe it or not, the Berkeley station doesn't have its own GLPT program, but there are GLPT programmers there, and they will contribute to it. So this evening, we're talking about the history of the Houston Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgender Political Caucus. And when it was formed in 1975, it was called the Gay Political Caucus, or GPC. Some of those founders are still around today, but I guess what we really wanted, the early days, and the reason for the caucus forming here in Houston was the brutality of the police department and the constant raids in the mid-70s that the police would do on the gay bars at the time. And in reality, though, it got people out to vote. In the early days, there was a number of things that the caucus sort of set up, in some ways, like how the Constitution was written. The Constitution was really sort of written in its rules to really hopefully be able to deal with things a long time down the road. And some of the things that happened at the caucus was the screening process, the list, and the get out the vote campaign. Well, I have two, one former president, one present president of the political caucus, who really sort of helped re-energize it in the past couple years. And Maria Gonzalez, who's also a professor at the University of Houston. And what do you teach there, Maria?
I teach English. My specialization is Mexican-American literature.
And how did you get involved in the caucus?
It's one of those curious narratives. I've always been political. I consider myself a scholar activist. And actually, it was a project back in 1999 that Grant Martin got me involved in, the old PVA, Progressive Voters in Action organization. All that was just to identify voters in Houston who are progressive. And one of the things I learned from Grant was, I'd always worked on campaigns, but I never really had studied them seriously. The thing Grant wanted to educate everybody about is, what is the process? So what is the most effective way of getting communities to get their voices heard? And
I think one of the things that is very particular here in Houston is the fact that this city is so big and so spread out that, in fact, Houston is considering has like seven downtowns.
Yeah.
And some people who live here never go to certain parts of the city. And being that it's a car city, there is public transportation here, but because it's so spread out, it's rather difficult to navigate that public transportation
system.
And
that also creates a real challenge if you're trying to do political canvassing of any kind. I mean, there's just no way to easily identify your voter base if you're a progressive candidate or if you're a progressive voter yourself. You end up identifying with different communities. I was a member of Tejano Democrats for a little while. I've always been a member of the Harris County Democrats, the party or the club. And I've always tried to stay active in those organizations, but they never quite address issues I wanted to address. When Grant Martin came forward with this project, basically said, we've got to identify the people who support us. I said, yeah, I'm on board. And, he admitted it's a page right out of the radical right wing's playbook. They actually have an easier time. On Sunday afternoons, they know where their members are. They just go to the parking lots and identify them of these, many of these mega churches. Our membership is a little harder to find. Our progressive voter is a great deal more difficult to find. So all it was identifying voters. In the same process, I'd been familiar with the with the Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus, as it was called in those days. I'd been familiar with them. I always looked for their endorsement card. But I never had been active seriously until 1999, when I realized that this was part of the whole progressive movement. And I really appreciated the work that the caucus had done and got more involved consistently. But it was Ken Jones, who had been a volunteer with the PVA, who really dragged me in. He became president of the caucus, and he said he really wanted to concentrate on just basically three things. And they were just screening candidates, endorsing candidates, and getting out the vote. That was it. Now, what he needed for that was pretty basic, and that meant that list, as you identify, a database of voters that we could churn out, like a machine. And I got excited when Ken Jones became president. I believe that was in 2002 or so. And that was when he brought me in. Next thing I know, he's identified me as vice president. And and then he decides, okay, he's had enough, and I'm the president. And that's sort of the way we make... I'm looking forward to us electing a president soon. At this point, we're still saying, okay, who's willing to volunteer? And what was wonderful is Jennifer was willing to volunteer to become the next president.
And Jennifer Poole is the present president, and she's first trans person to serve as the capacity of a president. And why did you get involved, Jennifer?
I had gotten involved briefly with PVA back in those days, but I had been politically active most of my life to one extent or the other, but basically centering around candidates that I might, you know, like. And I got disenchanted by it. The 80s sort of just ruined it for me, and I sort of just went along, sort of dropping out of the political scene until Anise Parker came along. And I became very active in her first winning campaign as a volunteer. Just I've always looked at myself as the quintessential volunteer, you know. And so by doing so, that's when I got in there again, centering around a quality candidate that I could believe in.
And the interesting thing is that the way the districts are set up here, almost all the political districts in Houston, is that they have divided the supposedly gay community, and especially state rep, but in the city, there is no district that is considering like the most gay district.
Yeah, in fact, we're the Montrose. If you the Montrose and the Heights area, where historically we have had the largest GLBT community historically, and we consider especially the Montrose area our home. In terms of city representatives, it's divided three ways. Currently, Ada Edwards represents one side of Montrose, the east side. Ann Clutterbuck is the west side of Montrose, and Adrian Garcia is what I call north side of Montrose. Well, okay, Heights. but you know. That's the way our area is divided up. So, you know, we're always interested in those three district seats, especially. And we consider all three of these individuals our friends, and we'll be working very hard with who we think would be appropriate to replace our friends.
And it should be noted that both Anise Parker and now presently Sue Lovell ran citywide, and they both won. And Houston has a two-year term for city council, controller, and mayor, and there's a term limitation of three terms or a maximum of 6 years.
That's right.
So Anise went through those 6 years, and she's now a controller, making her supposedly the second most powerful person in Houston.
And we hope someday...
Elected official, yeah.
Yeah, and we hope someday to... Well, in 2009, I'm planning to make sure she becomes mayor. That's one of our...
So let's talk about the screening process. What's
sure.
that all about?
Screening, I'm in the process right now of preparing a list of candidates who are going to be seeking the positions this fall. We've got another election this fall, and I'm preparing a list of all those who are currently in positions and will be running for re-election, as well as those who are going to seek seats in different districts, as well as at large. And if all goes well, I'll be sending out a letter inviting each of them to seek our endorsement. And we'll do most of the screening, the interviewing. We'll be setting up most of those in July. We might set up a few in late June, but most of them will probably occur in July. And what we do there is we ask the candidates which evenings are they available. We usually have 2-3 week period, and we run them in. We usually have a half hour to 45 minute interview process where we ask them specific questions. They get a written questionnaire before they come in, and we ask them to bring copies of that so that we have their answers in written form. Some of the specific questions are... Well, actually, Jennifer is working on a specific question.
Yeah, one of the specific questions that we have this time will be, would this candidate support a non-discrimination ordinance by the city of Houston protecting all GLBT people as well as all groups. Now, there's no specific ordinance that protects the individual citizens from discrimination. Also, a second question is, would you in fact support non-discrimination policies for all city contractors and suppliers? Again, the city of Houston has policies within its own government protecting the employees, including GLBT people.
Correct.
And it's to ask those contractors and suppliers who get thousands and thousands and millions of dollars every year to comply with the same things that the city government asks, you know, within its own organization.
And questions like that to a prospective candidate really can pin them down. Now, once we've had a chance to get their written responses and we spend a half hour talking to them, they are then ranked. Well, they're given percentages by the panel, and the panel's made up of members of the caucus, and those recommendations are then going to be forward to our Wednesday, August 1st endorsement meeting, and at that point, the membership votes. They will get the recommendations from the committees, from the panels, but it is a membership that decides who to endorse.
We are talking to Maria Gonzalez, who is the previous president of the caucus, now serving as the vice president, and Jennifer Pohl, who is now president of the caucus, and we're talking about the Houston Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgender Political Caucus. It should be noted that Houston is the fourth largest city in the country, and that Harris County, which encompasses most of Houston, is the third largest county in the country. So on citywide elections, there seems to be the fact that the caucus has some say in getting people elected. How about on some statewide or countywide offices?
Well, I'm really proud to say that one of our previous representatives is no longer representative. She represented the Montrose area, and we spent basically 3 years making sure that she would no longer represent us, our community. And I'm proud to say that Ellen Cohn now represents the Montrose area. Her district is, and Ellen Cohn is a real friend of the GLBT community. The previous representative was not. And we worked very hard on that campaign. We ID'd voters. We walked door to door on behalf of Ellen. We, you know, did our best to raise some money for her. And more than else, we made sure that Montrose, our specific areas, that, you know, the Montrose street areas like Hawthorne and those street, that they, those precincts all went to Ellen.
Well, what's interesting is that you talked about getting people elected and you talked about screening them. How do you actually help get them elected?
Well, we've identified our voter base. We've got a list right now. Jack, you can speak to that. Jack, I want to let everybody know, Jack is responsible for the maintenance and upkeep and of our database. He's a technological whiz. I come in, I say, Jack, I need the vote, the people we've already identified in precinct 137, I need them. It feels like magic. It's not. It's a lot of hard work and technology that Jack understands. He spits out this list, and I'm able to take that list and make phone calls from it or send out specific mailings to and remind these people to vote or even just go and knock on their doors and say, would you like a yard sign? That's how we get them. And then we get them out to vote. We'll
and that's the key to it. It's through phone banking, through robocalling, through mail outs, all of that is to let our progressive voters that we've identified know who the caucus has endorsed and urging them to go out and vote and giving them the possibility. I've been out, I'll work polls many elections, and people will pass up all the other candidates who are handing out their paraphernalia to ask for our endorsement card so that they know who would represent the caucus and the GLBT community better than others. And it's, you know, it's a vital service that the caucus provides for those people who are extremely busy and don't have time to do an in-depth study of all the candidates.
So
we do that for them.
The caucus publishes an endorsement card.
We do our best to get it out and publish it. We always have it on our website. We get it out in our mailings. We do our best to get it out in, you know, we do have a press release, and we hope that the media picks up as much of it. But, you know, we count on Queer Voices. We count on Outsmart. We count on our own website and our own emailings to get this information out, simply because the Houston Chronicle is not necessarily going to publish our endorsement card.
And we've been talking to Maria Gonzalez, who is vice president, and Jennifer Pohl, who's now president of the Houston Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgendered Political Caucus. If you'd like some more information, you can go to hglbtpc.org and find out some more information. You can probably just do a quick lookup of Houston Political Caucus, and the organization will pop up. And we're basically talking about some, you know, some rather simple sort of rules and how you get people elected and how you organize a community, and it's just basically a lot of work. You're listening to Queer Voices.
Nothing but missions erotic to test me not to use Burlingame Society in 1903. Sigmund Freud's Vienna's hype identifies a homotype, the intermediate sex and heterodoxy. The gay wave moves across the sea, hero there, Miss Liberty. Betty Booth is hot and pooches out in the cold. Greenwich Village, Queensbury, gays in high society. Harlem, not Chicago, fights Leopold and Lowe. Pride, pride, gotta have pride. Been around too long to keep it inside. Pride, can't sit back and watch from the side. Pride is power and power is pride. It's time to celebrate all the colors of the rainbow. Get out into the street, follow the tide. Active hits the Broadway stage, the fleets and cat moves all the rage, and the well of loneliness appears on the sands. Flashing red lights this whole night, Adolf shows Olympic might. Put on your pink triangles and put up your hands. 8 bomb 50s, Keen McKenzie shakes the cocktail scene. James Dean, Vanishing, Doris Day and Harry Day. Donald Webster, Corey Wright, Joe McCarthy picks a fight. J. Edgar Wright, well, shame on you. What else do you plan to do? Christine Jorgensen's reborn, daughters of Belitis form. And we have our naked lunch in Giovanni's room. Marilyn, the picnic scene, Jackie's in her Cassini, Vatican II, and something's coming soon. Summer 1969, the heat is rising all the time, and over the rainbow, Judy Garland sleeps. Stonewall Bar, men in blue, heads for broken bottles flew, out of the bars and into the streets. Pride, pride, gotta have pride. Been around too long to keep it inside. Pride, can't sit back and watch from the side. Pride is power and power is pride. It's time to celebrate all the colors of the rainbow. Get out into the streets, follow the tide. Boys in the band play Bette Midler, sang those bathhouse days. Lance Loud, gay and proud, Astro Wild bookstore, Sister George Dewsbury, Tales of the City, Anita Bryant, Village People, Studio 54, Harvey Milk, Rough Trade, Aaron Fricks, Prom Day, Grid, Torchon Trilogy, Boy George, NGMHC, HIV identified, Rock Hudson, Liberace died, Reagan finally says the word, Bowers versus Harvard's heard. Barney Frank, AIDS, Quilt, Act, up Randy Shields, Queer Nation, Maple Thor, Phase ET. Amendment to Cracker Barrel, don't ask, don't tell. HX, Cyber Sex, March on DC. Greg Louganis, Selkin, John George Michael, what is going on? Lily Fair, Rowdy Girl, spend a day at Disney World. Coonan and Scare them, make the case. He and Ellen will embrace. Matthew Shepard, God bless you. What else can we look forward to? Pride, pride, gotta have pride. We've been around too long to keep it inside. Pride, can't sit back and watch from the side. Pride is power and power is pride. It's time to celebrate all the colors of the rainbow. Get out into the streets, follow the tide. Pride, pride, gotta have pride. We've been around too long to keep it inside. Pride, can't sit back and watch from the side. Pride is power and power is pride. It's time to celebrate all the colors of the rainbow. Get out into the streets, follow the tide. Pride.
John Gilbert Levitt from the year 2000 and his song Pride. This is Queer Voices.
And now we're going to talk more politics, this time with Jeff Reed, who's our political pundit. And what's on your mind tonight, Jeff?
There's an election on Saturday.
There is still an election.
And in fact, I actually went and voted today, of all times, on a Monday. How in June? How weird is that? When's the last time you voted on a Monday in June, right? But early voting is open now.
Through tomorrow?
It ends tomorrow, but you can check harrisvotes.org for what your early voting location is. And tomorrow, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., you can go and vote, or you can wait till Election Day proper, which is Saturday, June 16th. Normal poll hours, normal poll locations then. And this is the runoff, of course, for the city council seat that was vacated by Shelley Sekula Gibbs when she went off to...
So there's just really one thing we'll be voting
there
on.
Having just voted hours ago, I can tell you for certain there is exactly one thing you will vote on. You will see two candidates' names, Roy Morales and Melissa Noriega, and you go vote for the candidate of your choice, and then you breeze out of there in about 2 minutes. It was very fast.
I voted over at the multi-purpose center on West Gray, I think maybe last Thursday, it was 2 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculously fast when there's exactly one race to vote for, and it's, you know.
Yeah. But this is a very important race for the GLBT community in particular, because of the history of past people that have been involved in the politics, and the fact that one of the candidates is endorsed by the Houston Gay Lesbian
right.
PAC.
And was endorsed by them for the general election before the runoff as well.
Right. And also because our vote will have much more of an impact because we know that voter turnout will be dismal.
This is one of those elections where our community has in the past had very large impacts. These runoff elections, though, when Sue Lovell got elected, was in large part due to her obvious support from the GLBT community.
And this is an at-large position, so it means anyone who votes in the city of Houston.
Right. If you live in the city of Houston, you are eligible, and you are registered to vote, obviously, then you're eligible to vote in this election.
And if you're not registered to vote, then get with it.
Then you should have been registered to vote already. Obviously, they're not going to let you register to vote in time to vote in this election, but you certainly should be registered before the November election.
So, tell us a little bit about the candidates and what's at stake.
The thing that's interesting about this seat is this will be an unexpected pickup for us, I think, because, you know, Shelley Sekula Gibbs I mean, I certainly didn't see it came out of left field, her just diving out of this seat to go spend a month in Washington and, you know, then get booted out of there.
Yeah, she was elected to fill the temporary vacancy of the seat that Tom DeLay in Congress
and,
had.
And she lost to Nick Lamson, who won the permanent, well, the, it's not
the official,
but the official, yeah.
Next
for
term.
The next term, and yeah, he's serving now.
Which is very fortunate for us.
It worked out really well because Shelley Sekula Gibbs was not really a great friend to this community.
Not at all.
And, you know, we have a great chance for a pickup here. And I think the broader story to focus on is this in part represents the demographic shifts that have been going on in Houston, certainly since Katrina, but in part before Katrina, where there's been a real change, a kind of a sea change in Houston politics, where we're starting to get to the point where it's going to be increasingly difficult for conservatives to win city elections. It's going to be increasingly feasible for progressive candidates to win things. And then the bigger story then is things like judgeships, which are going to start coming in play, if not in this next election cycle and the one after that. And so that's something for people to keep an eye on. And I'll remind our listeners that for many people, a judge is one of the most dramatic and important elected officials that they encounter in their lives.
Well, in reality, everybody is so excited about presidential politics and what happens there, and that is important. But more important to a lot of us is all those other races, everything from a school board, judges, yeah. City council, and it's really difficult to keep up with all of that.
That's right, and that is exactly why the GLBT Political Caucus exists, and that's why it has really served this community well, particularly in the last few years, by paying attention to these races, by screening all the candidates, which can be a very big job when there are a lot of judicial candidates. I mean, I've been on those screening committees, and it can be a grueling haul where you're talking to three candidates a night, 2 days a week for a month, you know, and it's just really important that we pay attention to these down-ticket races, particularly with things like the judges that many people usually don't pay attention to. Perfect example, I have a friend who recently got a name change because he was becoming a she, and that can be very difficult and frightening if you're in front of a judge who is not well-educated or supportive of GLBT issues. Now, luckily, her name change went through, but the judge she was in front of was not a very nice judge, and, it, you know, wouldn't it have been nicer if the judge had been informed and supportive and helpful instead of throwing up roadblocks to an already difficult process?
What happens in that endorsement screening process is an education for both sides. A lot of candidates are posed with questions that they hadn't really given thought to before, and sometimes it's an opportunity for them to learn something, and then also for members of the community to get to know the candidates. And sometimes, you know, they're really both really good, or there's five of them and several of them are really good. I have to say, it's something that the caucus does where the people involved are so conscientious. They really take to heart the responsibility of asking the questions, getting the answers, presenting it to the organization so that a vote is taken.
It's kind of funny you make it sound so high-minded, because for me it's actually very fun, and I think for a lot of people it is very fun, because you get to challenge people directly. You get to sit down across from, you know, that person who you heard is maybe not so gay supportive, or said something in the press or the media, or did something that maybe you didn't like, and you can actually confront them. And the thing that you learn is, you know, these elected officials are really just people like any other people, and sometimes when they're confronted with this stuff, they learn you know, something, and you sometimes learn something too.
Oh yes, it can be quite fun, but I didn't mean to insinuate that
it's not a lot of work, but it is it can be kind of intense, and it can be a little draining when you're
right.
talking to these people.
But what I wanted to convey was how it is taken seriously, and the stewardship that members of the caucus place on it. And I've had people say, you know, I'm really lucky because if I want to go vote and I want to make sure that I'm voting for the right people, all I have to do is look at who the Houston Gay Lesbian Political Caucus PAC has endorsed.
And that is the purpose and the value that the caucus provides for the community.
Right.
So, and in addition to also doing field work, I want to give a little plug, actually, real quick. I don't know if you guys plugged it before, but it's Pride Month. And Pride is the time when we do most of our voter identification. And voter identification is the core of this work, because if we have screened and endorsed a candidate as the caucus and we want to go tell our community to go vote for that person, we have to know who our community is and tell them who to vote for and where to vote. So we do a huge voter identification push during the actual parade. We need as many people as possible. We want to identify 5,000 new voters. There will be a meeting. The HERA, Houston Equal Rights Alliance, is putting together this voter registration or voter identification project. And the meetings are every Wednesday. So there's a meeting on Wednesday, June 13th from 6 to 9 p.m. And this is at the HERA office, which is at 1915 Commonwealth, Suite 104. That's near the corner of Commonwealth and Welch.
Okay.
And you can go to the website, that's www.houstonera.org, to get more information about that.
And so if you volunteer to do that, then the day of the festival and the parade, you'll go around with clipboards and...
There's a variety of roles. The key role is the person who goes around with a clipboard and a pen and talks to voters. And on the day of Pride, it's a lot of fun. People are there to have fun. They're there to participate in the community. It's really easy to talk to people at Pride because they're there to talk to people and be social and have just a good time. And so
Will there be a table in the festival space?
So there'll be a table in the festival space. HERA is, I believe, sharing a table with the GLBT Political Caucus this year. And so come look for us there. And we will also be, we're trying to do a new thing this year. We're going to try to do some voter IDs during the parade, so we're going to have a table set up after the parade is over as well to collect the information and things. But if people want to come look for us during the festival, that's sort of the best time to just sort of come and say hi. And if they want to help out, definitely go to the website, come to the meeting this Wednesday the 13th at 6 o'clock at the HERA office.
Okay, Jeff, let's go back a little bit to this election on Saturday.
Yes.
It's the runoff election for city council.
It's the runoff election for city council at-large position
and
3.
Tell us a little bit about Melissa Noriega, who is the candidate that is endorsed by the PAC of the HGLB.
So Melissa Noriega is a long-standing supporter of the GLBT community. She's the wife of Rick Noriega, who is a state senator, and when he was off in, I believe it was Afghanistan, for his military service, she filled his seat and did an excellent job in the legislature, so she has some direct experience. I've talked to her several times. I found her to be a very affable, friendly, and really down-to-earth woman in a way that many politicians aren't. You can actually walk up to her and talk to her like a friend, and you know, and she's just very, she's very easy to talk to, and she listens to us and our issues. And I know she was very appreciative of the caucus's endorsement, particularly because there were GLBT community members who were in the race when the caucus
primary
endorsed her in the primary, and the caucus, you know, made the decision that she was the best person for them to support at that point before it even came to the runoff. And she's always comported herself very professionally and very well.
Now, there was a recent controversy posed by her opponent regarding immigration, so their stance on immigration.
Yes.
And Roy Morales seems to think that police officers should spend their time with the immigration issue.
Right.
So, and Melissa doesn't agree with that. And Melissa has been endorsed by the police.
That's correct. Melissa was endorsed by the police officers union actually before this came up. But this is the kind of thing that she understands, the kind of deep understanding of the issues that she has that caused them to endorse her, because without this even coming up before, they knew that she would really, you know, support them on this. And the controversy is not really a controversy. Many conservatives try to drive the vote by scaring people with immigration talk. It's been shown again and again that that can be an effective tool for them. So what they say is, well, how come, you know, when we have these illegal immigrants in custody on a traffic charge or something, how come we just let them go back, you know, out into the wide world? Well, if a police officer, when they are doing a traffic stop or something, has to immediately worry about trying to determine someone's immigration status, that is a distraction from them doing their job, which means that they will be less safe and that they will have more on their plate than they already do, and they're already not paid enough for the work that they
do. And overworked.
And they are already overworked, so they don't need this, and it is the responsibility of the federal government and not the city to start enforcing this. And so, you know, it's just trying to basically drive conservative votes to the polls by bringing up this sort of canard issue. Nobody really, I think, thinks that the Houston police should have this role. Everybody agrees that the federal government should have this role. So, you know, why put the police in the middle of it?
Okay, well, that's the political beat from Jeff Reed. And you are reminded to go vote on Saturday if you don't early vote tomorrow. The polls are open 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Saturday, June the 16th. And you're listening to Queer Voices.
Church bells are ringing, the members wear their best. In the pews they are waiting for their holy guest. And the pastor knows his sermon, the choir stands in rows. There's a sense that something's missing, 'cause the guest of honor never showed. I saw Jesus on his own wall. That's the place we find him at. I saw Jesus on his own wall. Love can grow where you least expect. I can hear our conversation. I can feel our hearts unfold. What would churches think that the Christ has come to this watery hole? I saw Jesus at his stonewall, and he didn't seem the least upset. I saw Jesus at his stonewall. That's the place we finally met. I saw Jesus at his stonewall. One drink short of I saw Jesus at his stonewall. Love can grow where you least expect.
Down at Stonewall, that was Jalen Ricks.
Yes.
This is Queer Voices.
And, of course, we always like to give our little history listen every now and then.
History listen?
Yeah, history listen.
Y'all listen here?
Well, most of our listeners probably know the significance of Stonewall and why it's a word that's used a lot in GLBT organizations and in songs such as that, which because in 1969, in the month of June, there were some riots that occurred in New York City on Christopher Street.
That's right. When a transgender person threw the first high heel.
That's right.
For liberty.
Yeah.
For the community.
And there's also rumors that it was Butch Dyke that threw the first stone. But
Depends on who's talking and telling the story.
And there are people like Woodstock. There's people that claim to have been there that if all of the people that claim to have been there had really been there, it would have been much larger.
Well, I like those people that say, I remember the 60s. And, you know, if they'd really been in the 60s, they wouldn't remember it at all.
Those tired old jokes, Jennifer, just like. But Stonewall was an, it was called the Stonewall Inn. It had once been a tea room, later other entities, one of them becoming a gay bar. And there was a police raid, and for once the community fought back. And so it has been a marker of the modern gay rights liberation movement. Even though there were already established groups and people working on behalf of GLBT issues.
That riot, those series of days there in New York that galvanized.
In June.
Yes, late in June. What was it, 29th?
I want to say 26th, but it was the day it lasted for 3 days.
Yes, and the fact is that it galvanized the community to take action. It was the landmark moment in time when somebody said no more.
No more.
And that's for any movement, there has to be that one moment in time.
Began on June 28th.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The next year was when there was a commemoration of the riots, and thus began the annual GLBT Pride events that take place late in June. That's when
we have our parade
in June. And there's an excellent book written by David Carter about Stonewall, which is probably the most historically accurate book, even though it was written 30 years later. He was able to tell the story. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in another segment. But first, you have some announcements about some things that are coming up in celebration of Pride here in Houston.
You know, all of this information should be available at the Pride website, but
That's pridehouston.org.
Pridehouston.org. But on just a couple of things, on Thursday, June 14th, is the Pride Idol at Guava Lamp. At times you can catch on the Pride website. Saturday the 16th, Friends of Pride Wine Tasting at the Houston Club. Sunday, June 17th, Pride Idol Semifinals at Guava Lamp. And Saturday, June 23rd, of course, is the Pride Houston Festival and Parade.
Yay. And once again, that's gay, lesbian, trisexual. No.
Come on.
Gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered pride. Although, if you look at some of the materials that are coming out of the Pride Houston Committee, you may not know that. The theme this year is Lone Star Pride.
Lone Star
Pride. Yes, I'm proud to be a Texan.
Yes.
But it doesn't say
APIA.
Yeah, it doesn't say anything about the fact that it is queer in any way. Another thing, they have these really cute shirts, and one of them has two cowboys on it, and one of them has two cowgirls.
Aww.
Really cute.
Yes.
They're holding guns.
Really?
Yes, which kind of bothers me. But, okay, that's Deborah's rant. but I went to the opening kickoff event at the Museum of Natural Science last night, and it was the good show. Josh Duffy, who's going to be on the show next week, was one of the performers. He's also going to perform at the community stage at the festival.
Oh, terrific.
And the Pride Idol,
yes,
which is an event where different people have competed. They've had these going on for months or a couple of months now, based on the, of course, American Idol,
yes,
thing. And
a rip-off of American Idol.
And the people that are the finalists will be performing at the festival.
At the festival on stage.
It's kind of fun. and the Ray Hill and I were there with other dinosaurs. And
at the Natural History Museum. How appropriate.
It's the Natural Science Museum.
Oh, it's the Natural Science,
yes,
Museum.
I had a debate with somebody about that. And I said, well, I thought it was science. And then when I drove up and I saw the sign, I said, I was right.
Deb was right.
Just this once. On a more serious subject, not that Pride is not serious, but today started the beginning of National Men's Health Week.
Oh.
It always begins on the Monday before Father's Day and concludes on Father's Day. And that's because simply being male creates a health disparity.
I remember being male.
Men die on an average 5.2 years earlier than women. See, you're going to live longer.
I'm going to live longer.
They experience 93% of all fatal occupational injuries.
Ooh.
And they die 1.5 times more often than women from heart disease, are 4 times more likely to be successful in committing suicide, and there's lots of other horrible statistics. So it's this week, take the time to learn more about maleness as a risk factor for disease. Encourage your spouse, partner, male friends, children, and siblings to make an appointment with their health provider and to celebrate the men in your life.
Yes.
And older
men should also get a mammogram because men can get breast cancer.
Yes.
Mammograms are seldom necessary unless there is
I'm just joking about that part.
That's really nothing to joke about, but unless there's some kind of indication of a problem, they don't need a mammogram. And believe
right.
me, they don't want one. But,
do get breast cancer, which is possible.
That struck me because we talk so much about AIDS and hepatitis C and some other issues in the community, such as alcoholism and drug use, but just other things that affect our health. Everything from depression to heart disease to kidney stones. We need to look at our community, for all the men in the community to take care of themselves and their health.
Absolutely.
In other ways.
One quick thing before we go to our break, and that is on July the 4th, the Houston GLBT Political Caucus has its annual fundraiser, and it's going to be hosted at Anise Parker's home, which she's graciously offered that. And you can find out more information and an opportunity to donate to the website at hglbtpc.org.
Stay tuned for more Queer Voices.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Walensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
We'll find out how queer life in the U.S. is different today because of a pivotal meeting 30 years ago, later in the program. Renowned lesbian feminist rabble-rouser Sonia Johnson is drumming up a wild gathering for wild women. This Way Out correspondent Josie Cotoggio chatted with the housewife-turned-heretic about a revolutionary revival later this month in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Your first book was From Housewife to Heretic,
right.
Was about your excommunication from the Mormon Church.
That was a long time ago, thank goodness.
And then you went on a fast for the ERA in Illinois.
Yep. And wrote about that in Going Out of Our Minds. And I also wrote about the presidential campaign.
Yes, you ran for president.
Yep, on the Citizens Party ticket. That was in 1984, because I figured that was a good way to say some feminist stuff.
And then you decided to just walk away from the patriarchy completely and say, that's enough of that.
Well, I wrote another book before that, but in that book I was essentially saying that, and that was Wildfire.
What made you call your event coming up a feminist hullabaloo?
Well, we just wanted to indicate the energy of it, that it is going to be very high energy when all these wild women get together and reunite. And we just thought, well, what could we, you know, other than a brouhaha, what could we what can we call it? And somebody said, what about a hullabaloo? And we said, it just felt like it represented how excited we were at the thought.
Well, your feminist hullabaloo is reuniting the Wild Sisters, and you've got an amazing list of guests here. So let's start talking from the beginning of the alphabet, Marky Adam.
Right.
Wonderful musician. Paula Gunn Allen, who I adore, one of the most brilliant Native American thinkers, writers, speakers, amazing woman. She's
Isn't
really extraordinary.
True. She's going to be there, and I trust as her same old wonderful self. I shouldn't say old, but we all are.
Hey, we
know?
Are old, honey. That's one of the reasons that we've got the wisdom that we have.
Well, that's one of the reasons we're having the hullabaloo, too, because Jade DeForest, my partner, when Andrea Dworkin died, she said, you know, you women are going to be dead, and people are not going to hear you anymore. We need to get something together to hear Mary Daly, who is also an old woman. Sally Gerhart is old.
Yep.
I'm old, you know.
Yep. Well, I'm excited about Sally Gerhart because I haven't talked to her in years and years and years since she was writing the Wanderground stories.
Oh, no kidding.
So is she still writing?
I don't know that she is. I don't think she is. Isn't that a shame?
That is a shame. She's such a wonderful writer, and I love those Wanderground stories so much because they posited what an all-woman's world might look like, where women's psychic abilities and intuition were like a major part of the culture,
as
opposed to just being a little side thing, you know?
As opposed to being put down every time they popped up. Too.
Yes, exactly.
Right. Well, then, you know, let me tell you some more people.
Yes, tell me who Shaba Barnes is, because that person I'm not familiar with.
Well, Shaba Barnes is an African-American woman from Albuquerque. She's actually a minister, but she's also a priestess, a goddess kind of priestess, ritualist is what she is.
Ah.
And she is amazing. And she's a marvelous feminist, and she's going to end the program with a big ritual of closing of some kind.
Ah.
Well, that's what we call a commitment ceremony, which means that the whole thing, this whole thing that we've organized, is to try to bring together again the women who want remember the community that we had in the women's movement, who've been lonely for it, who felt isolated, who have been homesick, and the women and any other women who are interested in meeting these marvelous women who came through that time. You know, the audience will be full of them, and we think we have found a way to keep ourselves in touch. And that's what's going to happen at this commitment ceremony. We're not going to let anything shatter this connection again. We're going to make them, and we're going to keep them.
Okay. And Alex Dobkin, of course, is the original lesbian separatist musician whose music is just so amazing and wonderful and energizing.
And who has to be at something like this. I mean, there's no having something like this without Alex. This is about energizing women. It's about just making them just so glad to be alive. They just want to be in touch with each other. They want to remember how it all felt here when we were all together. You know, women together are incredibly powerful.
It's true.
I think we're in the last days of patriarchy. Of course, as long as you've known me, I've thought that. But
well, they're just very long last days, Sonia.
Well, no, but you know, it's geologic time. You
yes,
know?
There you go.
Yes. And I think that we're at the place where women have got to take responsibility for what happens next. I think we have to help save the Earth. I mean, she's female. I think we just have to figure out ways to give direct energy from our very powerful women's souls to this planet, and I think she gives it back to us. I know she does all the time, even though she's in peril and fighting for her life. And so, you know, I just think there are ways, things to do. I mean, this is serious business. We're not going to have another chance. This is it, you know. We've got to get to work because we will never get the men to do it. We've been trying now for at least 5,000 years and maybe 20,000, and boy, it sure got us a long way, didn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, so anyway, that's the kind of thing we're going to figure out. And these are the very wildest. Well, you know, we're all too tame, but some of us are more feral than others, and I'm just hoping the place is full of feral women. By that I mean that they're not men's women. I mean, they're not what men think women ought to be, but what women think women ought to be, which is, you know, a whole different story, right?
Well, if you'd like more information, you can go to the website at www.feministhullabaloo, that's HullaBalloo.com, for the Feminist Hullabaloo Reuniting the Wild Sisters, June 22nd to 24th in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Lesbian feminist author activist Sonia Johnson in conversation with This Way Out correspondent Josie Katogio. The U.S. National Gay and Lesbian Task Force commemorated the 30th anniversary of the first ever White House meeting with LGBT activists by hosting a telephonic panel with some of the participants. In part one, the panelists told NGLTF Executive Director Matt Foreman how the meeting came to be and summarized the concerns they presented. Their discussion continues with activist Charlotte Bunch commenting on one impact of the 1977 summit.
At the Beijing Women's Conference, for example, in 1995, when the lesbian rights issue was raised, we actually gained a lot of allies who did indeed respond. So I think that this kind of event opened us to a larger public, and we've now seen that a more polarized debate, but also one in which that polarization has also increased our allies.
Charlotte, don't you think that many gay activists don't realize what a politically conservative country we actually dwell in compared to other countries?
Absolutely. I think the U.S. is very far behind on lesbian and gay rights and many other issues in the international arena, certainly behind Europe, but also behind many countries, sometimes in Latin America and other parts of the world as well.
That's correct. This is Troy Perry again. I visited with the government of President Lula in Brazil a year and a half ago because of their work in trying to bring, adding one of the reasons for not murdering us, sexual orientation, to the United Nations. Our own government won't do anything around it, but Brazil has. I travel all over the world and I talk to politicians everywhere I go. And this country, at one time, we were leaders. Now, it's just awful.
Yeah, there was a statement at the recent Human Rights Council on lesbian and gay rights, rights of sexual orientation, gender identity, signed by 54 countries.
Yes.
And the U.S. was them.
Right.
And we'll take our next question from Jerry Maneker with Christian GFB.
Thank you, GLBTRights.org. Thank you. This is Reverend Perry. Given the fact that most of the organized church is homophobic, what more do you recommend that can be done to pressure churches to stop advocating denial of civil and sacramental rights to LGBT people?
I'm thrilled today this discussion is going on in religion, period. And there's no easy answers anymore. What we have to do is continue to reach out to them. I've said to religious leaders, I wish you wouldn't, but if you believe homosexuality is a sin, your church can say that. But that shouldn't translate into homosexuals shouldn't be able to work for a living, have housing, adopt children, serve in the military. I just do all of that with them. And, you know, once in a while, I do get groups who change. They say, you know, that's right, we can't go on like this because we're being turned into people looking at us as just being old-fashioned bigots. We've got to at least quieten down the rhetoric and permit people to have their freedoms, their jobs, etc.
This is Frank Kameny. I have a comment on that. Our movement, as a movement, I have criticized it for not handling our rhetoric sufficiently strongly. We tend endlessly to be reactive instead of proactive. And we ultimately get things like Hillary Clinton and Obama saying homosexuality is not immoral. That's reactive.
Yeah.
Who is saying what we need to say is the next step? Homosexuality, including homosexual sexual conduct, and you have, is not only not immoral, it is affirmatively moral. And nobody is saying that. You have to take the next positive step. It's not that you go quoting the God of Leviticus. You say our true God has given us our homosexuality as a divinely inspired gift and blessing to be enjoyed to its fullest, exultantly, exuberantly, and joyously. It's not that gay is bad, it is that gay is good. And nobody is saying that affirmatively and frequently enough.
Thank you, Frank.
Stop pulling our rhetoric.
Okay.
And we'll go next to Lori Jean.
I wondered what you would say was the most substantive result of your meeting. I was fortunate to be in one of the meetings. Clinton, during his presidency, and while it was one of the most exciting experiences of my life, to tell you the truth, I don't think a single thing came from it.
Well, this is Midge, Lori Jean. I did make reference to the Civil Rights Commission.
Uh-huh.
I thought was so significant to have us included on the mandate against discrimination on all levels. HUD did change its policy about granting housing and forbidding discrimination against gays when they applied for the federal housing. The IRS actually has stopped denying tax-exempt status to a gay organization.
I brought that up at the meeting, and I was told with a certain amount of kind of horror, oh, the president could never give instruction to the IRS. That's not something we can get involved in. But quietly behind the scenes, they did, and within a matter of weeks or a month or two, everything cleared up.
That's right.
Wow. Wow.
Yep.
While a lot of things are not written into law, so many things changed, including the federal prisons and the way they reacted.
Remember, I brought that in because of our church being denied the right of going into federal prisons.
Yeah,
that changed overnight.
Right, and the fact that federal grants for gay counseling and health and education groups has changed. They're now included. Well, not one of them would deny a meeting to any of us. And that's why a lot of things change, not by law, but just privately and secretly. And they've become now embedded in the manner in which they operate.
And we'll take our final question from Chris Worthington with the Berkeley City Council.
I'm wondering now, you know, we're looking at the White House and the election coming up, what the people who were there 30 years ago, what they see as the demands that we should be putting on potential candidates today as to what we want to see happen in the next president in the White House.
Well, I can tell you one of them, and that's no constitutional amendment on marriage. And they all have to say to me, before I'll vote for any of them, is that they're going to do that. And with the marriage issue, it'll be state by state more than with the federal government until all the states make decisions and finally the Supreme Court will decide.
Well, this is Charlotte. I would just add to that, although marriage is a state by state issue, immigration is a federal issue.
Yes.
And the implications of not having marriage rights, I don't think any of us are saying things haven't changed. Things have changed enormously. And while lesbians and gays can enter the country, they still can't stay here with their partners based on partnership rights, and they cannot get work permits that heterosexual couples take for granted. So
yes.
I think this is a very good issue for the candidates to speak to.
This is Pokey Anderson, and I would like to see an administration that will do just as the Carter administration did with our issues, and that is open the door to rational conversation.
Yes.
Not overlaid with some sort of ideology that comes from a fringe. The ideology of this country should be to obey the Constitution and to give opportunities and freedom to all.
That's right.
And that's what I'm looking for in a presidential candidate.
Walk right in and lie down. Let it let your mind roll out. Hey, you walk right in. Still don't know why. But that is way too long. Tonight, David Boy is talking about it.
See the way you want to be. See the way you want to be. Hey, you walk right in. And lie down. And let your mind roll on.
You've been listening to NGLTF Executive Director Matt Foreman moderating a panel of participants in 1977's first ever meeting at the White House with LGBT activists. You heard comments edited by This Way Out's Lucia Chappelle, by former Carter White House advisor Midge Costanza and her then assistant Marilyn Haft, former U.S. Congressperson Elaine Noble, the Reverend Troy Perry, and activists Frank Kameny, George Rea, Charlotte Bunch, and Pokey Anderson.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Do it. Let's fall in love. We have something we can fall in love with, and that is the performance by the Bayou City Performing Arts Gay Men's Chorus of Houston on Saturday, June 16th at 7:30 at Jones Hall with their concert, There's No Place Like Home.
Exactly. It's our final concert in our Homeward Bound series this season.
And we have Colleen Fisher with us, and your title is?
General Manager.
Oh, wow.
Head Guru Grunt, you know, My Gal Friday, as I like to be called.
And there's been a series of concerts this year that all had the theme of home in them.
Yes.
Was there an overall title? Coming home, being home.
Homeward Bound.
Homeward Bound. I knew there was a word. So both the Gay Men's Chorus and the Bayou City Women's Chorus have had this theme of home. This, you said this is the final chorus for this year?
Yes.
They're taking a special theme for this event that is based on Judy Garland.
Yes.
And her music and her life and loves. And so, of course, there's no place like home, the famous line from The Wizard of Oz.
Exactly.
And, you know, we're sometimes GLBT folks are called friends of Dorothy, and I think for all of us that movie just speaks to us about, you know, looking for something and that there has to be something better, and then being not only realizing that what you're looking for is at your home, but having your home be what you need it to be.
Sure. And there's other meanings in that movie about looking to find friends in places that you hadn't thought to find friends before, and allies, and
being different.
Exactly. And embracing that difference.
Yes. And so the beloved movie, The Wizard of Oz, but this doesn't just feature Wizard of Oz
no.
songs.
No, not even close. We are covering the broad spectrum of Judy Garland.
Well, she had a long career.
She had a very long.
She, in fact, I think yesterday or today was her birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And then she also died in the month of June. And her funeral was on June 28th. And June 28th was also the date that the Stonewall riots broke out. And there's been a long-held belief that the bars were very crowded and that there were many people there that were in mourning for Judy's, from her funeral. Although the David Carter book says not so. Says there's no evidence to indicate that had anything to do with it. But we don't know that it didn't.
You know, and until I can talk to some people that were there and figure out what the heck was going on, James, our artistic director, James Knapp, built the script for the show. And we kind of fell into to believe the myth. And we decided that a good portion of the show would be based around the day that Judy Garland died and how it impacted Stonewall and just trying to carry on a legacy. She was a huge fan of, not a fan, that's a bad word to use, but just she held the community near and dear to her heart and was very actively involved.
There's some rumors that she also was bisexual.
Yes. So, and you can't, I don't have any evidence for that.
But certainly
either.
She had a huge gay following.
Yes.
And, Jennifer and I both probably remember a lot of Judy's life being old enough to. You just barely, Jennifer, but I certainly I remember her television program. Of course, all her movies. I love I'm forgetting the name of the movie. The one that Come On, Get Happy is from.
Oh, shoot. Of course you would ask
with Gene Kelly, because I also loved him. It'll come back to us in a minute. Or Gene Glenn will look it up and tell us. She was such an incredible person and performer and had such a tragic life. I even remember when Liza, her daughter, Liza Minnelli, who also kind of inherited
exactly.
her mother's
inherited the legacy
appeared on her television program and so you know to me it'll be a walk down memory lane to hear this music. What are some of the things that you think stand out about this concert?
More than anything, the guys have been working really hard. There's moments we're doing the duet that Barbara Streisand and Judy did, and we're doing it with two guys from the chorus. We're actually doing it as a duet performance only. We're not doing it with
costume.
No costumes.
Oh,
at least I don't think so. James
hasn't
mentioned
that little sailor dress, didn't she?
Nothing, no. Huh?
I'll be wearing ruby
I'm
red slippers.
Wear my red.
You better believe.
Yes. Yes, I will. I will be in my.
I shopped for weeks trying to find something.
Didn't Barbara have that like sailor collar on with the little bow?
Yes,
and
sure
that?
Did.
Knowing James, I wouldn't put it past him.
Oh.
I would
well,
not put it past him.
I'm sure there will be some costuming
yes.
within the performance.
Yes, we are doing
props and costuming.
We're doing a Wizard of Oz medley.
Uh-huh.
And the Cowardly Lion, the Tin Man, you know, the Scarecrow.
Is there Glinda the Good Witch?
There is.
Oh!
Played by our infamous and lovable Gary Kinney. So it would be fantastic. He played the teacher, Miss Twinkleton, in
uh-huh.
our Christmas production. So of course I'll talk like this the whole time.
The Barbara Streisand Judy Garland duet her career took her from I think the state of Washington to Europe, all over the world, through both films and television was brought to us. Is still an icon, many impersonators through the years, you know, have done her. She was an original and she was unique, and it will be great fun to hear the music again. Give me a little bit of the details about time, place,
sure.
How to get tickets.
Be more than happy to. So tickets are on sale all week. You can either purchase them online on our website at www.BayouCityPerformingArts.org. The concert itself is Saturday night, this coming Saturday, June 16th at 7:30 at Jones Hall. The box office will open at 6:30, so you can come and purchase your tickets at Jones. But in order to get the best seats, we'd ask that you call ahead of time and get those tickets, and we'll put them in will call for you. It's just going to be an absolutely tremendous night, and we've actually partnered with Pride this year. Pride rearranged their schedule to move their wine tasting earlier in the evening so we could share that night, which is all about the community just kind of helping each other.
Right.
So if you are a friend of Pride, you also get 20% off of your tickets to come see the show. So we're encouraging all the friends of Pride to call the office at 713-521-7464. Again, that number is 713-521-7464. Give us a call, get your ticket set up, go to the wine tasting, come see the show, make it an incredible Saturday night. And then after the show, you can join the men and all of us at Cafe Rigoletto, which is just one block north of Jones Hall at Prairie and Louisiana, and you can enjoy some cocktails and help us celebrate the end of a tremendous season.
Wow. And certainly it's a concert that is a perfect match for our season of Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgender Pride. And I want to thank Colleen Fisher from the Bayou City Performing Arts for being with us on Queer Voices. Before you leave, is there anything else that you want to tell us?
Just a couple things. Keep on your calendar that we're going to be in October, on October 23rd, we're doing a concert called Sing for the Cure, which is going to be a benefit concert for the Susan G. Komen Foundation. So starting now, actually, in these couple of weeks, and also in the rehearsals during August, we're going to be recruiting new singers and encouraging people to join the men's and the women's choir. It's going to be the premiere of the Bayou City Chorale, which is the gay men's chorus and Bayou City women's chorus singing together as one chorus united. It'll be a tremendous concert. So if anyone's interested in singing at all and has any, you don't have to sing well, you just have to love singing.
And Deb, this is your chance.
Yeah,
no, we don't want that. Okay. And what is this piece of music we're about to hear?
This is Be a Clown, which was written by Cole Porter and was performed by Judy Garland in one of her many movies. And it's was performed in our Red Hot and Cole show several years ago, which is a perfect fitting to end tonight's interview. Thank you so much for having me tonight.
Thanks
for
being here.
Take this advice.
is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee, and keeping with our theme of Pride, GLBT Pride, coming up this whole month, we have with us the members from the Imperial Court of Houston, Jerry Rockwell, who's the Gemini Empress.
Gingivitis.
Yeah. And Oren Culliver, who is the Apollo Emperor.
Hello.
Okay. And now, we were having a discussion before we went on the air about whether or not, now these are honorary Grand Marshals. Are you Grand Marshal?
We actually were elected Grand Marshal Organization.
Organization, okay.
Yes, we're a 501c3 fundraising organization.
Okay, well, tell me something about your organization.
We are what you would call a monarchy. We have, of course, the Emperor and Empress, which are basically co-presidents of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have our line of succession. Dukes, duchesses, ladies, lords, viscounts, imperial princes.
And we we play the game of royalty all year long as we raise money for a particular charity, but then we raise money for other things that come up throughout the year.
Okay. And what are some of the charities that y'all...
This year, our actual beneficiary is Legacy Community Health Services.
Oh, wonderful organization,
program.
Yeah.
But we also, you know, that's our beneficiary. There's also, during the year, we do what we call direct benefits, which would be forbearing dental.
We had a group in the AIDS Walk.
Yeah. AIDS Walk, Lazarus House.
We've raised money for Camp Hope and, you know, AIDS Foundation in Houston, which Camp Hope is part of.
So it's a game we play. You know, we bow to each other and Her Majesty and Your Majesty and light the ladies' cigarettes and buy her a cocktail and all that sort of thing. So,
having been to some of the functions, I understand that part of it, but the people out in the audience may not know all of that, or they may have stumbled in and understand.
And wondered what in the world was going on.
Now, how long has the organization been around?
We are celebrating our 5th anniversary this year, as a matter of fact.
Oh, okay.
So this is a big deal for us.
We're very excited.
Yeah, to actually be Grand Marshals the year we celebrate our 5th anniversary. It's really amazing. It's really amazing.
And let's say more about what y'all do. Now, as far as Grand Marshals, what are your functions during Pride?
Be seen. Be heard.
We went to the social at the Museum of Natural Science just yesterday evening, which was very nice, and nice turnout at that.
Yes, it was. Very nice. Very nice.
And is it a matter that y'all show up at all the functions? Is this part of
it? The ones that we're invited to, we will sure be, we'll sure try to make a presence,
Yeah, and, you know, obviously, for obvious reasons, you can't get to all of them, because there's work, and there's what we do with our fundraising.
Have a real job?
Yeah, really. Yeah, unfortunately. Or fortunately, how you look at it. But yeah, we get to as many as we possibly can, and it even gets to the point where we at some point we'll have to split up, and one will go to this one and one will go to that one, or we'll have other people within our organization in our line of succession that will fill in for us.
Now, the organization, how do you become a member of the organization? How do you
Very easy. You contact us at spacecityempire.org, and there's memberships online. It's $5 a month. You come and do what you can, play with us when you can play with us. We have drag shows, we have bake sales, we have car washes. We did a function at the art gallery. I can't, off the top of my head, we do it.
Well, that was one of my questions, is that when you say raising money and fundraising, what sort of things do you do? You've named a few. What about you? What do y'all?
Well, we have our, like the art show we had, it was called Eastman Smith Gallery, and they were gracious enough to have some of their artists donate some paintings. And then we brought to that night silent auction items, and we were able to raise a nice sum of money. It was a two-day event, and one time we were even asked to bartend at an event. So if there's an opportunity for us to make extra money for our organization, we're out there.
We do, you know, like every Sunday morning we have breakfast at Mary's. We serve breakfast at Mary's from 10 to 12. It's like $3 a plate. It all goes into the bucket. It's, you know, you're talking biscuits and gravy and all the trimmings. And so it just, anything, and we're always looking for outside of the box things to do. to kind of break the monotony.
Our general meetings are held on the first Thursday of every month over at Legacy Community Health Services at 215 Westheimer for anyone that might be interested in joining.
Just show up?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What time was it?
7:30.
Now, how's the organization structured? I know we were talking about, you know, y'all are like co-presidents.
There's actually a board of directors. You know, we have the chairman, the vice chair, and the board of directors is actually elected by the membership. And you have to have been a member for so many months or years, whatever, in order to get on the board. And then Orlin and I actually, for lack of a better explanation, we answer to the board. The board is in charge of the finances and us. We're in charge of the membership.
Okay.
That's basically how it works. And then every year, and as a matter of fact, this Friday night, we've got what we call Summer Soiree coming up. And that's the night when whoever wants to run for Emperor and Empress for next year will pick up their applications. And there's a whole campaign process. You know, we go to Galveston and campaign. We campaign here. And then come, I can't even remember when elections are. August. Actual elections are in August. And then usually 2 weeks after elections, we have what we call P&P ball, our prince and princess ball. That's when his and my...
We
honor our right hand. We have an imperial prince, a imperial crown prince, or crown prince royale, and crown princess royale. And they're like our right hands.
And that is the night that they shine, and we also introduce the new monarchs for the next year.
Which are the imperial crown prince and princess royale. That's where I was getting...
Right.
You know, I'd have to have a program to keep up with this.
Well, there is a program, as a matter of fact.
Oh, there's a program?
Yes, there is.
Where would I find this program?
We have the handbook when you become a member.
And you can also join, and you don't, you know, a lot of our entertainers, I mean, a lot of our members perform. You can sing, you can lip sync. A lot of the guys will do drag, and we have females. We have had females that have joined the male line. Or you can even just join to be a contributor, just you know, someone who just comes to help out. You don't have to perform. So we welcome anyone who's interested in joining our organization.
We're always looking for behind the scenes help.
Right.
Well, there's a lot that goes on behind
yes,
the scenes
that
within
you
the
can
organization,
learn, you can learn, right.
Especially if there's some performances going on.
Yes.
Now, you've given. What was the address again?
215 Westheimer for our meetings over at Legacy Community Health Services.
No, but how to get in touch with the organization.
SpaceCityEmpire.org.
Okay. Now, you go to that website, and what do you, does it give you a list of all the activities and all?
It should, but it doesn't always. Again, we all have jobs, and it's really hard to keep up with that.
Right.
What we do is we're all members of several lists. We have a PR person, and like on Mondays, Orlin calls all the members to tell them, okay, this is what we got going this week. This is what you need to be ready for. Mm-hmm. And then we also... On the list, there's like the Louis list and that sort of thing that are Yahoo groups. It goes to all of those groups so that all the groups know what's going on. Now, there are links on the webpage that will take you to different organizations. It'll take you to our application. You know, that sort of, take you to what our history is, that sort of thing.
When you talk about groups, what are the groups you're talking about?
Oh, like the Misfits, the Bears, the Louis Group, which is the Houston Council of Clubs. We've got the Wretches. We've got the Debris Sisters. I mean, there's...
So there's plenty of opportunity for anybody to be part
absolutely.
And to participate.
Absolutely.
Anyone can join.
Yeah.
But that's excellent.
Yeah.
And as what is it, other than joining, you know, going and joining, what sort of things do y'all do, or will you be doing at Pride? And now, as part of Pride, you were talking earlier about going to different events and all. Is there a specific function that you characterize other than going the parade and wave?
Well,
are y'all even in the parade?
Oh, yes.
Oh, so
we will have a big float in the parade.
You're going to have all your finery and everything?
Yes. We will have all the crowns and the pins.
All
and,
the regalia.
All the regalia.
All the regalia. Gowns and crowns and hair.
Now, who has been Grand Marshals in the past? Anybody? For people out there who might want to know of some other people.
For organizations? I don't know. Sean Carter, who is one of our founders of ICOH, is a former, is a past Grand Marshal. Jimmy Copper is a past Grand Marshal.
Mm-hmm.
Organizations, golly. Bunnies in the Bayou.
Bunny
was last year,
Bunny,
I think.
It was last year, yeah.
Yep, yep. Oh, I'm old and I drink.
You'll have to stop that soon.
Yeah, but I'm afraid to stop. you know, I honestly don't know who the other is.
That is a question to be put on the spot. We should have come prepared. Yeah.
I can name individuals, you know, Sana Alton and all that. But when it comes to the organization, I can't even... they don't stand out like the individuals do. But I know the individuals.
I believe. And yes, like Weldon Hickey, he's with Crew of Olympus. He was a Grand Marshal for the Pride Parade a couple years ago also.
Well, I have been to some events in the past where, you know, the royal courts and all. It's quite impressive with all of the regalia, the outfits. You know, I don't like tall heels, I'll tell you. You know, 3 inches.
I don't
inches.
Either, but my legs look flawless in them.
Mine look okay with 3 inches, I'll tell you.
Our big event comes up in October, and that's when we step down, and that night honors the things that we have done, and we bring our new monarchs are get their official
crowned,
yeah.
You get so,
and that crown them. And that happens that happens October 20th at the Crown Plaza Hotel.
One thing about Pride and the parade and all the events, what about at the festival? Y'all doing anything during the festival?
We usually have a booth. we always have a booth, but it's kind of like Orlin and I are going to make the appearances and do all, you know, that stuff, and the board and all that is handling all the behind-the-scenes stuff.
You delegated it to them, haven't you?
Well, sort of. Not sort really, of but sort of.
Yeah, okay.
We like to think we have.
Well, I have been always intrigued by the court system and how did it evolve? Give me a little history, not just your organization, but in general.
That's the man that knows the history right there.
Well, give me some history.
The original court started in California, and it's been, my gosh, I bet it's at least 40 years old. If not older.
Yeah, it's got to be.
So, and that is the international court system. Ours was started 5 years ago, and there is another organization here in town that plays the same game we do, called the Empire of the World Sovereign Imperial Court of the Single Star, and they are recognized by the court, by the international court system. And we were hoping that they would let us have two, since we're the fourth largest city.
We're big enough to have two.
We think we are, and so we are. You know, we are in our fifth year, and we are doing things quite well.
And we actually focus on our community. We're not real concerned with what goes on outside in other states and other cities. We're more concerned with what's going on with our people here in Houston, how we can help
all the local charities.
Yes.
Local organizations.
Yes. Colt 45, the AIDS Trouble Fund. Yeah. That's our focus.
And some of the organizations, again, that you've raised money for
AIDS Foundation,
because that's important for people to know that, it sounds like great fun.
It can be fun, but it's also a lot of work. It really is a lot of work. Don't let anybody tell you it's not.
Okay.
They tried to tell me it was, but I didn't believe them.
Turn off your phone.
But it's going to make a lot of noise when I do that.
You should have turned it off before you came
yes,
to see
know.
Skull. Look at that. Both y'all are pulling
And
your
I would
bones.
Learn that, you would think, from Jimmy, because he scolds me about it as well.
Well, he'll get you the next time.
Yes, he will. But that's all right. I know where he lives.
Well, I am with Jerry Rockwell and Orlin Culliver. They're both from, tell me your organization again.
The Imperial Court of Houston, the Space City Empire, Celestial Frontier.
And the way you get in touch with you by the website?
It's, now I've drawn a blank.
If you have a question, you can send that to monarchs
yes.
spacecityempire.org.
Okay. And thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Always a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
We have cleared off the table, the leftovers saved, washed the dishes, and put them away. I have told you a story and tucked you in tight at the end of your knockabout day. As the moon moon sets its sail to carry you to sleep over the midnight sea. Well, I will sing you a song no one sang to me. May it keep you good company. You can be anybody that you want to be. You can love whomever you will. You can travel any country where your heart leads. And know I will love you still. You can live by yourself. You can gather friends around. You can choose one special one. And the only measure of your words and your deeds will be the love you leave behind when you're gone.
Some girls grow up strong and bold, some boys are quiet and kind.
Some race on ahead, some follow behind.
Some grow in their own space and time.
Some women love women, and some men love men. Some raise children, and some never do.
You can dream all the day, never reaching the end of everything possible for you. Don't be rattled by names, by taunts or games, but seek out spirit's true. If you give your friends the best part of yourself, they will give the same back to you. You can be anybody that you want to be. You can love whomever you will. You can travel any country where your heart leads. And know I will love you still. You can live by yourself. You can gather friends around. You can choose one special one. And the only measure of your words and your deeds will be the love you leave behind when you're gone.
The love you leave behind when you're gone.
From 1990, that was a track called Everything is Possible. The group name is Flirtations. Not to be confused with The Flirtations. This is just Flirtations. This is Queer Voices. And the reason why you don't want to get that confused with The Flirtations is because The Flirtations was an all-female group.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
On that note, without JD here, we still have our queer music heritage.
That's right.
And, of course, at the end of the month, I think JD has another trans artist in music.
Yes, it's the second part of his transgender music heritage with featuring all transgender artists. He had it also... we'll have a segment, at least one segment, with a transgender interview. I tried to arrange for two last time, and it looks like this time I may only have one. But we've got some other segments that'll go in to sort of fit in within the same theme.
And well, then in July.
In July.
We'll be running some of that Pride National broadcast and being able to run different segments, sort of like how we do This Way Out. And there should be some really interesting... and exciting things, and it's sort of a way for some of us programmers in one city to work with some of the other programmers in the other city.
Now, I think that's great.
Now that really broadcast, which will be on the Pacifica stations, will be on Sunday the 24th?
No.
It will be when?
No. Well, we're very lucky here in Houston, the fact that we have 2 hours on Monday night and 3 hours Saturday night, Sunday morning.
With after hours.
After hours, right. So I didn't really ask for special programming because other people do programming in those hours on Sunday, and Pride is on Saturday anyway. So I thought it would be best for us that if we just run some of those segments in July, because they're not dated for just Pride.
Oh, which will give us a break on the show. We won't have to do to work so hard.
Right, because we do work so
we'll
hard.
We'll be canned.
Yes. Well, some of us do. Anyway, next week on the show, we have we'll be talking more about the Pride Festival for the pre-parade, and we'll talk about what's in store and about some of the headliners. Singer Josh Duffy will be performing at the Pride Festival, and J.D. Doyle talks with this Houston artist who will be on the community stage.
Yes, and Joan Devlin talks with Houston author Lance C. Trudeau about his latest work, From the Depths of Hell, about two men struggling through a relationship while trying to deal with their own secrets and baggage.
I love the way Joan can be in Iowa and still be part of this show.
Oh, I love it.
Yes. And plus, I'm working on a possible surprise segment next week, so you'll just have to stay tuned for that.
Should I bring a cake?
And are you going to jump out of this? Queer Voices,
it'd
of course.
It'd be too big of a cake.
Queer Voices, of course, presents your weekly local news for the GLBT community in Houston. We're on from 8 to 10 p.m. every Monday night, community-supported, commercial-free radio for peace. We're on the web at www.kpft.org. You can listen online or listen to archive edition of the show for 60 days. They keep them for 60 days.
Supposedly. And the computers don't always work that way.
Right.
And we'd also like to mention that we're always looking for more people to come and join the program, especially
younger people. Someone 30 or younger would be great.
This is not the wrinkle show.
Now, we do not discriminate.
No, we won't discriminate, but we would appreciate. So, what else? We got to remind folks about voting on Saturday.
You could still vote tomorrow.
Early voting, yeah, till 7 tomorrow. Right. You can early vote.
And if you need more information, you can go to harrisvotes.org.
And Melissa Noriega is the person endorsed by the caucus. And
caucus PAC.
And then, of course, we have the events coming up with GLBT Pride in Houston, plus the parade, festival and parade on the 23rd. More things next week on Queer Voices talking about that. And then
July 4th is the Houston GLBT Political Caucus fundraiser, their annual fundraiser. It'll be at Anise Parker's home. She's opened her home up to the caucus. And
that'll be the last time.
Come and be part of it. It'll all American Barbecue between 3 and 6. And you can, after it's over with, you can go watch the fireworks.
All right.
And then, if you would like to help us with the voter ID project that the Houston Equal Rights Alliance is working on, along with the caucus, you can go to the meeting this Wednesday at the office at 1915 Commonwealth at Welsh. You can go to HoustonERA.org to find out more information. And basically, we're going around and asking people to sign up so that we could put their names on the database and remind them when it's time to vote, et cetera, et cetera. And if they're not registered to vote, we can help them on that.
Well, thanks to all the folks that were on tonight, the Maria Gonzalez with the caucus, Jeff Reed on the political beat, the Colleen Fisher from the Bayou City Performing Arts, and those great guys from the Imperial Court. That was very interesting.
Jerry Rockwell and Oren Culliver.
And that's all the queer news that's fit to tell on Queer Voices.
Good night.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Mike Farrell and Death Row Exoneri, Greg Wilvoit will be speaking at an event benefiting the Gulf Region Advocacy Center. The event will take place on June 29th at 6 p.m. at Christ Church Cathedral in downtown. Greg Wilvoit will speak about his wrongful conviction and the 5 years he spent on death row as an innocent man. Mike Farrell, the actor, writer, director, and activist who gained fame on the TV show MASH, will speak about issues surrounding the death penalty and sign copies of his memoir. Dinner and drinks will be served. Student tickets are available. For more information and to buy tickets, go to www.gracelaw.org.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.